I'm going to ask Jim Loomis to come. Where are you, Jim? Is he in? He's in the back. Before Jim gets up here, we have, there's been about 10 of us that have been meeting, kind of a ad hoc committee along with elders and going over all the numbers of this building. And but it would almost, wouldn't have been impossible. It would have been very difficult without Jim Loomis helping us. He is a lifelong realtor, been involved in industrial buildings and private sales. And he has done so much legwork to when we looked at appraisals and getting the comps on this building and dealing with Gary Skolton. And so he's really been a blessing. And he's a big believer in play it forward, you know, in God. And so Jim is just, he's very quietly behind the scenes been a huge blessing in this process, making things happen. So Jim, come on up and share.
Okay, well, thank you. I really haven't done anything. It's kind of been the Lord. This has kind of been a God thing from day one. But I've had a couple of you guys ask me how I can be so happy and so passionate about giving money, because that's kind of hard to do. And I'm going to just share today with you a miracle that happened in my life 100 years ago. I asked Christ to come into my life, and I became a changed person. I started going to church. I started witnessing. I did all the right things. I prayed. I read the Word. And in the meantime, I was raising a family. I went to work for my dad. I'd always wanted to work for my dad, which was kind of neat. A lot of young people don't know what they want to do, but I knew what I wanted to do. And he had told me, he said, "Jim, you'll never get rich working for me, and you'll never get rich working for yourself. You'll only get rich when your money works for you." And as I worked for my dad, I realized I wasn't going to get rich working for my dad. And I also realized that when he was gone and I took over the business, I wasn't going to get rich working for me. I had invested in a couple of houses. The market went up. Interest rates went down, kind of like right now. And so I refinanced them because I was going to let my money work for me. I finally had a savings account. I never had a savings account in my life. But now I was a big investor. I had money set aside for the bargains. I could bottom feed. I could double my money. My retirement was taken care of. You know, God was good. Thank you, Lord. Well, one day at church, guess what? There was a building campaign. They wanted to build a building, not buy a building. And the pastor was talking about what our pastor's been talking about, sacrificially giving. And so I said, well, I guess I'm going to, you know, have to give something over and above and beyond. And I had this conversation, and actually it was a conversation with God. And I know this sounds Looney Tunes, but God has spoken to me over the years. It's only in my head. It's a small, quiet voice. It doesn't go away. And what he says, I know it's from God because A, it's good, and B, it's something I'd never do. So I knew it was from God. Anyway, I'll give 10% of my savings. Even though it's borrowed money, Lord, it's not money I've earned yet. Haven't paid taxes on it. And he said, no. And I said, well, okay, I'll 20%. And this still little voice said, no. And in the meantime, the pastor had quoted from Malachi. It's Malachi 3, there's only one place in the Bible where God says, test me. Because, you know, we're not supposed to test God. When Moses tested God, it's a bad thing. You do not want to test God. But there is one place in the Bible where God says, test me in this, and that's in Malachi, where he says, if you bring in the fruits of your tithe, test me in this, I will fill your storehouses to abundance. It will overflow. It will, you know, be a lot. So I'm having this conversation with God, and he gets me up to 50%. Now, that's incredible. I've worked all these years. I can't say that I made the prices go up, because I didn't, but I'd worked all these years, and I'd borrowed this money that I was going to have to pay back. So to give 50% of it, I thought God would have the angels sing and the trumpets blow, and he just said no. So I sat in this same seat, same sermon. This all happened over the space of probably 30 minutes. I'm going to just make a long story short. I wound up leaving that church, committing to giving 100% of that account to the church fund. Now, it was a large church. Nobody knew me from Adam. And the way you store up money in heaven by paying it forward, as Bill said, is you do it anonymously. You don't let your left hand know what your right hand is doing. Well, I went home sick. But I wrestled with it for a couple of weeks. But I kept coming back to the same thing. God said, test me in this. And what I realized was I was afraid. I was afraid that I was giving up control of my life. I was giving up control of my security. I was giving up control of my way to make money. I was actually about to turn it over to God. And it was a very terrifying thing. You know, we talk about faith, but faith and fear kind of go in the same direction, because the more you fear, the less faith you have, and the less you fear, I just said it wrong. Anyway, the more you face your fears, the more you allow God to show you what he's capable of doing. I went to the bank. I got a cashier's check so it would be anonymous. I put no return address. I walked out of my office. There was a mailbox right in front of my office. I opened the lid with one hand. I held the envelope with the other hand. It took me almost 15 minutes to let go of that envelope, because I knew that once I'd let it go, it was totally irretrievable. It was gone. Nobody would know. I kept a copy of the check for my tax deduction, so at least I could get the deduction. But I was totally trusting in God. I let go of that check, walked back into my office, and you know what happened? I went back to work. And there were no trumpets, there were no angels singing, but my life didn't change. I kept doing what I was doing. And the years passed. And you know what happened is that I had given up control of my work, of my investments, of my savings, of my buying, in my case, houses. But we all have a different way of doing what we do with gifts and talents. And with me, my talent was buying and selling. That's what I do. I have a passion for it. But I gave up doing it for the money. There are two perspectives. There's a upper story and a lower story. And I heard this a few months ago, and it's really stuck with me. Our perspective is the lower story. We see things the way mankind sees things, and God sees things from the upper story, the higher story. And from my perspective, I wanted to have faith, and I was afraid to trust God. So I wanted to trust him with just a little bit. And God said, okay, you can do that if you want, but that's not going to give you what you want. What I wanted was faith. I really wanted faith. So he got me up to 100%. Somebody's phone is ringing. I think Satan is trying to interrupt my chain of thought here. Anyway, God wanted to answer my prayer from the upper story. God really wanted to give Jim faith in him. But the only way that I could achieve that faith was how? By letting go of control, by taking myself out of the picture. And that's what I did. And as the years passed, guess what? Money was no longer, I shouldn't say important, it's always been important. That would be an overstatement. But what I found was I became a very generous person. And if you had known me BC, before Christ, I was not a generous person. I was a very tight, selfish, self-centered businessman who thought cutting a sharp, slick deal was what I was supposed to do. And what I found is the more generous I am, the happier I am, and the more prosperous I become. That's the miracle in my life, is that I went from thinking I was a successful businessman and realizing I was just a cheap shark to trying to I don't know what I was trying to do, but I'm going to go back to my notes. Okay, God became more important to me than money. Money had become a tool. We all have tools of the trade. Money was my tool. One of the miracles that I had happened to me was in my business, I had a small line of credit with the bank. And over the years, it's like the loaves of bread. Do you remember when Christ fed the multitudes with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish? Well, this little line of credit somehow enabled me to accumulate a lot of real estate. And I don't know, it was miraculous. I cannot explain it to you. I can only say that it enabled me to do what Bill read this morning in paying your treasures forward into heaven. And that's what happened. So when I say give sacrificially, what I'm really saying is stretch your faith, step out of your comfort zone. As long as we remain in our comfort zone, we're in control. And this building isn't about how much the guy next door to us gives. It isn't about how much we need or don't need the church, or what the church will be used for or not used for. We're all members of the same family. We're going to get the church if it's God's will. This is an individual opportunity for each one of us to have an individual conversation with God and ask to be stretched But only if we want to be stretched. If we don't want to be stretched, don't ask, because he will answer your prayer. And it can be uncomfortable. But as Bill also said, as we get through this thing called life, remember, you can pay it forward, but you have to start at some point in your life, or you'll get to the end of your life, and you'll still be where you were when you first started your spiritual walk. Another quick story. I'm okay? Another quick story about faith. I was riding on an airplane late at night. I'd been going to and from Dallas, you know, four times a month in business. And I remember looking out the window, and one of my prayers again, Lord, is this all I'm going to do? I would really like to do something that glorifies you with my life. I would really like to do something different. What can I do? And I heard this same small voice come to me, and all I heard were three words. The first word was Haiti, and the second word was 50 children. And I continued this conversation with God, trying to get more clarification, but in the final analysis, it was those three words. Haiti, go to Haiti and find 50 children. So I went home, I told my wife, she said I was crazy. I went to the library and got books on Haiti. There were very few books. None of them were before 1957. Oh, by the way, this was back in the 70s or 80s. Because Papa Doc and Baby Doc had been in control, and it had been a kind of a closed country. It took me 2 years to get up the nerve to go to Haiti. I finally got up the nerve because another Christian friend of mine agreed to go with me, and so we were going to really, it was two buddies going out to have a grand adventure and spend a week figuring out where the 50 children were. The day before the flight, tickets already purchased, he calls and cancels. You know, scary, real scary stuff. I had a mentor. I called my mentor, and no, my mentor called me that afternoon to wish me luck. And I told my mentor what had happened, and he said, well, I'm really sorry, but do you think God still wants you to go? And I said, yeah, I think he does. So he called me back an hour later, and he had a friend in a Haitian ministry in Phoenix, Arizona, and the friend actually agreed to fly into Los Angeles, LAX, and ride with me on the plane to Haiti. And to make a long story short, I wound up spending a whole week in Haiti in a four-wheel drive vehicle on terrible roads, hunched over in the back. And I just saw incredible things. And I would like to emphasize is the fear factor and how God works. The first day when we were out, we stopped at a store to buy a Coke, and it also had a restaurant there. And as we were pulling out, another car pulled into the lot, and Chuck, the man I was with, recognized the driver of the car, George, and yelled to him, and they wound up talking back and forth. They were pastors of a ministry there in Haiti, and they never took a day off, but they'd just gotten a brand new car. It was their anniversary, and so he was taking his wife out to drive the new car. And being a pastor, of course, they invited us to come to the mission the following week to have dinner with them and to see the mission. And we agreed. And then we spent the next week in seeing Haiti. The day before we went back, the last thing we wanted to do was to drive 35 miles back to the mission to have dinner with the people. We were tired. The 35 miles is the worst 35 miles in Haiti. It's Highway 1. It had been raining. There were pit holes. But at that time, there were no cell phones. There was no telephones. There's no way to communicate, and we couldn't just not show. So we went. And I was sitting at a picnic table with the pastor, and he was telling me his story. And my ears picked up when he talked about a little village that he and his son had been going down the coast on in a little fishing boat called T. Riviere, which means little river. And it had never, it was just very primitive. Straw huts, dirt floors. Their mission consisted of starting schools and churches, one-room schools and churches in villages, and they'd feed the children one meal a day, which was an incredible boon for the whole village, because by taking the children, the only meal the kids got, of course, was the one meal, but it really helped the family, because then the family didn't have to feed them at night. The kids also got medical, they got clothes, uniforms, books, education, and the only requirement was that they and the family had to go to church, which is, you know, a pretty good deal. A church had come and agreed to take those 57 children back with them to get sponsors for the children, and the church, after 6 months, still hadn't done it. And so the pastor was saying to me, you know, I'm sitting here with this box of 57 pictures and the histories of these 57 children, wondering what God, because I know God wants us to do this village and build this school, but the church has really let us down. Well, when he said 57 children, I knew that's what, and I gotta forgive me, I get a little emotional, but I knew that was why I was there. So I took the box back to California with me. I went to the missions pastor at the church that I was going to and gave him the box proudly and said, now you need to find sponsors for these children. And as the weeks passed and nothing happened, I couldn't understand, because I had done what I was supposed to do. So I was on my way to work one day, and I was praying to God again, and this same little voice came to me and said that Jim, you have to do it. And I said, well, Lord, I'm a realtor, I'm busy. And he said, well, you asked for this. So I went back to the missions pastor, I took the box back, I got permission to set up a table between church services and lay the pictures out and tell my story, and for several years, that's what I did. But what happened over those several years is that I wound up leading quite a few mission trips to Haiti. I finally even took the pastor to Haiti after the pastor's daughter had gone and come back and with a most remarkable testimony. Anyway, the point that I'm trying to make here is that fear stopped me from going to Haiti for 2 years. Fear stopped me from letting go of that check. Faith enabled me to let go of that check, and it enabled me to go on to Haiti, even with somebody I didn't know, to find some children I knew not where. It was giving up control. Years later, I was at the same airport in Haiti waiting to be picked up, and unbeknownst to me, the ride had come and gone, and I was left at the airport surrounded by hundreds of Haitians, didn't speak their language. They all were kind of reaching out at me because I was the rich American, and I after an hour, I realized that my ride was missing. The mission didn't have a phone. Cell phones didn't work. I didn't speak Haitian. Anyway, to make a long story short, believe it or not, a Haitian pastor took pity on me and took me to New Missions. And he wound up taking me out to another village that he had a heart for that was much more poor than T. Riviera. And for some reason, chose not to do anything. What they needed was a water pump for a well so that they could have fresh water. Water is a really big deal in Haiti because of the pollution. Anyway, another time I took a group in from the church, and there was a revolt, a uprising over the government, and machine guns were being fired, and we were trapped in a hotel. And the airport had been closed and taken over by the rebels, and they were burning tires in the streets. It was just really a scary situation. And again, it'll sound amazing, but I said, Lord, this is not my responsibility. This is your responsibility. Just like this church is God's responsibility. It's not up to any one of us to buy this church. God knows, and he's in control of each one of our lives. And to the degree that I gave up control, God took control. But to the degree that I held on to control, he said, okay, Jim, roll with it. So I was stuck in the hotel with machine guns firing in the distance and a bunch of real scared teenagers. And he prompted me to get in a rent car and go find a way using back roads to the mission, and I did, and I came back, and it was safe, and we went to the mission. We spent the week doing what we needed to do, and then we trusted God to take us to the airport safely, and he did. And when we got there, there were troops on top of the airport buildings with machine guns, but under the cover of prayer, we came home. It was not a big deal. So I guess what my story is, the reason I have a smile and I say this is not a burden, this is an opportunity for each one of us individually to test God, because he's promised that if we test him in this one area of giving, he will open the storehouses of abundance. But in order to do it, we have to trust him. So that's all I have.
How many learned something about Jim today? And he's also, he wouldn't say it, but he's been on mission trips to Mongolia, to Iraq, many of those when he was in his 60s. He's still in his 60s, late 60s, but 60s. But he's it's amazing, and appreciate you breaking bread. Jim has a way, too. When they were back, he took a vacation with Linda to New York, and that's when Hurricane Sandy hit, so they were trapped in their hotel for 4 days. So if you want to go on a trip with Jim, tighten your seatbelt. That's all I'm saying. Let's stand.